The title of my presentation today is Importance of Efficacy Among African American Christians in HIV/AIDS Ministry Participation. I'd like to acknowledge my colleague, Dr. Kathleen Welshimer, who is an associate professor at Southern Illinois University at Carbondale. I have no relationships to disclose. I was the primary researcher on this project. So let's talk a little bit about HIV/AIDS programming in the African American community. Research has stated that African Americans do receive HIV/AIDS programs better when they come through the community, and that deals with issues of distrust within the government, which we know about, we've read about. Community-led organizations tend to encourage African Americans who are looking for these types of HIV/AIDS programs to feel more at ease, that there is true and honest and genuine concern for their well-being and not being used. And it's very important that any of these programs are held in an environment, in an environment where they feel safe. And one such environment is that's prevalent in almost every African American community is the Black church. Just want to take a look at the importance of religion among African Americans for a moment. This is from the Pew Forum U.S. Religious Landscape Survey, which was last done in 2007. And when asked, how important is religion in your life? You can see that approximately 79% of African Americans said that religion was very important. And then if you look at that broken down by denomination, you see that Protestants, or among Protestants, 86% felt that that was important. And that's very critical because usually if African Americans feel religion is important, they tend to be more likely to unite with a church. And it doesn't mean that they are regular attendees, but it does mean that they unite with a church. So I developed a survey, and this survey was based on a conversation I had with a friend of mine who is living with AIDS. And I developed a conceptual framework because my question to him was, why do we not see African American Christians engaging in the fight against HIV/AIDS, and especially engaging in HIV/AIDS prevention within the church, much, at the same rate that we saw the civil rights movement? And he said, because they're not motivated. And I said, well, how do you know they're not motivated? And so my health behavior brain started getting working, and I love models, conceptual models. I start salivating when I think about them. So we started looking at I started looking at possible background factors and then some other factors that I felt would be interesting leading up to both individual participation in HIV/AIDS ministry and congregational participation in HIV/AIDS ministry. And looking at some of the constructs that I felt may have an impact on one's motivation to participate. And you can see that I had my little mouse with me, but you can see that that moderating factor is perceived efficacy, and I felt that that involved both or impacted on both an individual level and a congregational level. So I developed the BCHAS, and that's what I call it. It's 7 subscales, 99 items. It is a beast of a survey instrument, but the good thing is that there are subscales that can be used independently. Those subscales look at perceived threat, divine causation, normative attitudes regarding personal action, normative attitudes regarding congregational action, perceived efficacy, religious motivational orientation, and then actually ministry participation. When I was doing the research for this and really looking at perceived efficacy and making the case of why perceived efficacy is important to look at, is an important construct to look at if you are thinking about engaging in or participating in HIV/AIDS ministry, it's because it doesn't, to a certain degree, you almost want to say that if you believe this quote, that take all the other constructs aside, if someone does not feel confident in their ability to engage in that behavior and make the desired change, they're not going to engage in that behavior. So I wanted to see whether or not that was true. And Bandura feels that that is a very key motivator. So my sample size, I did this study in 2006, summer of 2006, in the Washington, D.C. area. I sent requests to 17 D.C. area churches, and out of those requests, I actually had a total of 6 churches that agreed to participate. You can see that right here, the total possible end size was 3,460 congregants. In order to ensure that I had some reliable and valid data, I needed to make sure that I had at least 375. A little bit about the demographic profile. You saw there I had some factors that I wasn't sure whether or not would have an impact on ministry participation. These included gender, ethnicity, age, the educational level, whether the person was a church leader, whether or not they had a personal relationship with someone who was living with AIDS or was HIV positive or had taken an HIV test at some time in their life. 79% of the participants were female, which is not uncommon for the black church. You tend to see more black females in the black church than males. The mean age was approximately a little over 53. Nearly 54% of the participants had college degrees, and 78% of the participants had personal relationships with persons who were either living with HIV or living with AIDS. And that was significant because we're talking about the DC area. This is higher than the national average. The national average is approximately 64%. And so you keep in mind that if you look at the charts from CDC and look at the prevalence and incidence rates across the country, that DC is disproportionate always. So just keep that in mind. And then 60% of the participants indicated that they had taken an HIV antibody test. I did not ask whether or what their result was. I felt that that was not necessary. Data analysis for this survey, validity, I did use an expert panel to review the original version of the survey, and they helped me tremendously narrow down some information. The survey was pilot tested to a group of African-American Christians in Western Kentucky, and from their feedback, it was then scaled down a little bit because the original survey instrument had 112 items, and they gave me good feedback to knock some of that out. Reliability was assessed by calculating the Cronbach alpha for the total instrument and per subscale, and then statistical analyses were conducted. This was for my dissertation research, and I had 12 hypotheses, which was insane. Nevertheless, you know, you learn from your mistakes. All right, so let's look at the reliability, and this is of the actual the study instrument, which has 99 items. The alpha for the total instrument is 0.937, which I guess you would say is pretty good. I look at that and I say that I need to go back and still look at this instrument because it may indicate that there's some redundancy in questions to have an alpha that high. But I want to direct your attention to perceived self-efficacy and perceived congregational efficacy, which had, again, very high alpha levels. And I can, if you want to talk to me afterwards, we can talk about this perceived threat and religious motivation, these numbers, because they were so low, 0.57 and 0.66. Significant variables, when I actually went through and did my regression analyses based on the conceptual model, there were several constructs, as you see, that were significant. And perceived efficacy was one of them, which was what I had hoped for. And so that helped me see that at least with regard to individual ministry participation, perceived self-efficacy was very important. Religious motivational orientation was not significant. I'll give you an idea of some of the questions that were asked. This was done on a Likert scale, and for perceived self-efficacy, there was the general question, if I were asked right now, I am confident that I could, and then there were sub-items. Some of these included pray with someone who has HIV/AIDS. 80% of the participants actually agreed. Spiritually counsel someone with HIV/AIDS, 58% agreed. And I'm going to show you there's a pattern here in 1 minute. Give food to and or cook for someone with HIV/AIDS, 81% agreed. Teach people in my community about HIV/AIDS, 51% agreed. And bathe or groom someone with HIV/AIDS, 45% agreed. One of the patterns that you see here is the more intimate the types of behaviors or involvement in ministry participation that you ask, the confidence level or the efficacy level starts to decrease. Not as many people feel as confident in doing those things, which is important to note, because you don't want to go into a community of faith and want to launch a program that tries to do everything. You want to start where people are and what they're comfortable with and then build on that. Significant variables, when I did my regression analyses looking at congregational ministry participation, you can see it was congregational affiliation, perceived threat, and normative attitudes regarding congregational action. Perceived congregational efficacy and religious motivational orientation were not shown to be significant constructs in the data analyses. Now, that being said, I will tell you that for self-efficacy, there were a total of 20 of those individual little questions that ranged from prayer to driving someone to helping them find housing, as well as some of the other ones. When it came to congregational efficacy, there were only 4 items that were asked. And that, I believe, had an impact on why it didn't show up in the statistics. But I do still believe that these questions are important. Again, they were asked, if my church got involved, we could make a difference against the fight against HIV/AIDS in the U.S. Approximately 83% agreed. We could make a difference in the fight against HIV/AIDS in the African American community. 77% agreed. We could make a difference in the lives of people with HIV/AIDS in the U.S. 75% agreed. And we could make a difference in the lives of African Americans with HIV/AIDS. 77% agreed. And so the congregational feeling as far as or level of efficacy, reported or perceived efficacy, was that they felt that they could make a difference if they got involved, which is good, because you want people to think that and believe and have confidence that they can actually make a difference and end up with the desired effect. Again, going back to the Pew Research Center, I wanted to make sure, even though my statistics showed that perceived congregational efficacy wasn't significant, what did African Americans feel as far as speaking out or doing something collectively regarding to social issues? And what I found was that, as you can see, among African Americans, 61% believe that houses of worship should speak out on social and political issues. Unfortunately, they didn't delineate any further than that. I wish they had delineated between the social and political a little bit further. So the application to practice, what does all of this mean? What all of this means is that this subscale can be used as a reliable and valid needs assessment instrument when you're going into a house of worship, specifically a Christian house of worship. Again, I said, start where the congregants are. You don't want to rush into helping a congregation build a ministry that goes outside of their comfort level and pushes them to the point where you're going to have a limited amount of people who probably are going to get worn out or burned out very quickly. So you start where they are first, look at those highest levels of efficacy. If all it is prayer, then start with prayer. And then as time goes on, then you can enhance ministries with those next areas. If the next most efficacious area they had was trying to talk with the community about HIV/AIDS or educating, then you build trainings for the congregants on around that, and then have them add that type of service into their HIV/AIDS ministry. That's all I have for you. If you would like more information, there's my contact information, and I am willing to send my survey to anyone for you to use in your research or in your practice. I just ask that you report back to me to let me know what you found. Thank you.